Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. We miss you. Yes, we do. It's the morning coffee notes review. It's the good morning coffee notes for you. That's right. It's morning coffee notes for me and you. Hey, everybody. It's April 16th, 2005. This is the fumbling around morning coffee notes. I'm doing a lot of sort of prep work here to get this thing going, and I mean, in the process, I'm completely losing all the spontaneity that goes into creating one of these magnificent morning coffee note podcast deals. So I decided that while I'm getting everything together, instead of just sitting around sort of like, you know, thinking of things to talk about and not talking about them, I thought, well, let's just get the microphone going here and we'll figure out how to get these things to work in just a minute. Well, I wanted to open up with a clip of a song that was, I think it was like, was it 1985? Yeah. USA for Africa, We Are the World. And I wanted to play a bit of that, not the whole thing, because I want you to go out and buy the song or give money for Africa because it's a good cause. And, oh, cool, the dishwasher. If you were hearing, I don't know if you can even hear it, but in the background there was a dishwasher going. Oh, there it goes again. So much. I thought it was stopping. But, you know, that was all part of, like, being spontaneous. I could have, like, waited for it to finish and before I did my Morning Coffee Notes podcast. Well, let's see. Okay, first let's do the music. And first what I have to do is I have to get it out onto Toodly Ting 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 Too. That was a little Irish doodly doo. Ding 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 ding. Why isn't that showing up? I have my little stupid player thing. And I inserted it properly, I thought. But the little motherfucker isn't showing up. Damn it. How come everything is a motherfucker? Because we're on Windows, that's why. The cool thing about Windows, you know, Mac users are so pleased with themselves. They've got a new operating system, and they always like to tell you, well, we have it so much better than you do, okay? Well, Windows users, we have an answer for that, is you do. And so what? We like being losers. We like using the inferior operating system. Why? Because it improves our character. It strengthens our philosophy. Who wants to, I mean, like, I'm not a Yankees fan yet. If you always went for, like, the best team in baseball, one would say, well, God, you got to root for the Yankees, right? But I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm a Mets fan, and I go for philosophy. And although it may not appear, okay, that Windows has a superior philosophy to Macintosh, in fact, it does. I know it seems weird. I know it does. But it does. And us Windows users are actually very happy to be using this system, even though at a moment like this, I've inserted the USB to do dee ding dee ding the stupid little device, $49 MP3 player thingy, and I've inserted it into a slot. The operating system said that it recognized it and then proceeds to not show it up on the desktop, because what I was going to do was copy the song onto the stupid little device, and then what was I going to do? I was then going to plug that into the speaker and then it's weird. There's a guy sitting right outside my window. I just realized it. And now I have to, like, do this thing and, like, be aware that there's somebody, like, listening to me talk while I'm doing it in real time. I don't like that very much. It's a problem with living in a fucking apartment, man. It's like, I like living in a house better because, like, there was never anybody sitting right outside your window. Anyway, let's find this stupid music. 2-2-2. Oh, there. That's it. Nope. Well, let's try this, plugging it in and unplugging again. Maybe the power isn't on. Maybe the power, maybe the battery ran out. That's a possibility. Let's see. I'll bet that's it. Let's try adding a new battery here. Because then what I want to do is I want to answer. I'm just going to pretend I'm on the fucking phone. How's that? How's that for an answer? I'm going to put a new battery in here and see if that helps. But then what I want to do is answer the final questions on Shell Israel's questionnaire thing. I bet the battery's out. Ooh, what was that? I don't know if you heard that. Did you hear that? Let's see. Let's power this baby on. Yeah. Oh, that seems to have helped. We only have 2 megabytes free, so I will have to delete something. Because there's no doubt it's bigger. Okay. Got one of these Belkin 7-port things. It's very nice. I found new hardware. It's a disk drive, it says. And there it is. It's drive I. So that was the problem. The problem was that it was out of battery. Put a new battery in and everything's fine. Okay, so there's a 21. Oh, Bill Gross. You can delete him. I thought Bill Gross would do. I listened to him talking at the Web 2.0 conference. And I got to tell you, I was pretty nauseated. The trip there seems to be that they're sort of pretending that the bubble never burst. And so a guy like Bill Gross gets up on stage and they use the same old sort of like, well, gee, you know, we were on a stage in 1998 raising money together and I got more money than Bill, but Bill's a lot smarter than me. Okay. Now, tell me why that matters in 2004, which is when this thing was done. So Gross gets up and does a demo of a new web search engine, and it actually sounds pretty good. And I kept thinking while I was listening to it, well, all right, it's a demo. I can't really see what he's talking about. And then I thought, wow, you know, how much better it would have been if instead of going to this conference and I assume thinking that he's talking like to like everyone who matters, that if he like sort of went on the road, and in this day and age, what that would mean is basically sending an email to some guys who have blogs that lots of people read, maybe even lots of blogs, even people that don't get read a lot, you know, like maybe the Technorati 100 or something like that, you know, And then we could try it out and we would use it not just once, but 25 times. And we would go poke around in all the little nooks and crannies of it and try to figure out what we like and don't. And every time, of course, that we poke into another nook and another cranny, we write about it. And that helps keep the buzz or start the buzz for it. And God, I don't even remember the name of a search engine, Snap or something like that. I'll find it out and I'll point to it from today's scripting news. Today is the 16th in case, I think I did say that. But you know, so they go to the insider conference and they all sort of like, you know, talk to the VCs and, hey, you know, even if the VC gives you a lot of money, then where are you? Because how do you spend money to market these days? I mean, really, it's all like basically getting the word out. That's what you got to do. And you got to get people using it so that they don't just talk about it and then forget about it. They have to feel like, okay, you know, every day I'm going to wake up, I'm going to start like looking in the search engine instead of looking at Google. And that's a real, real tall order, but that's the reality. It's, you know, maybe he's got a lot of innovations and I'm sure he filed a few patents there, but, well, I think it takes more to actually make it successful, rollout these days. So now I've got the music where I want it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to unplug this mofo from the USB and then let's see. So it's been removed. And there's Run DMC. This is going to be a bitch trying to find it. Let's see. What was it? It's USA for Africa, right? So I should have left the damn window up on the screen. Oh, what was the number? Ha, that'll tell us. I'm sorry. I'm sure you're very interested in this. And the song isn't even all that great. Well, there it is. But what's so cool about it actually is that it's got all these great stars on it. And actually they're saying something that's pretty nice, you know? Okay. So, and you can hear those people talking outside. They're smoking too. Smokers. Good thing the window's not open. All right, here we go. You ready? Tina Turner. It's Michael Jackson. Diana Ross. Here comes Dionne Warwick. Willie Nelson. That's Al Jarreau. And here comes Bruce Springsteen. Kenny Loggins. Steve Perry. That was Daryl Hall. Here comes Michael Jackson. That was Huey Lewis and Huey Lewis, and here's Cyndi Lauper and Kim Carnes and Huey and Cyndi, and now Ray Charles, Bob Dylan, Stevie Wonder, and Bruce Springsteen, and everybody else. Bob Dylan right there. Thank you. Okay, okay, okay. Thanks very much. All right, very good, very good, very good. Okay, cool. We're going to, like, totally scroll this thing down. I don't know how well that came through. Hopefully you could hear enough of it to sort of get the idea. That was a big hit in 1985, and there was a famine or not exactly sure what in Africa, and that was the music industry's answer to it. It was kind of spooky listening to it, hearing Michael Jackson's voice in there, with all the controversy, of course, there is about Michael Jackson. Anyway, so we're going back now. The last podcast that I did, actually, in terms of the chronology, it would be like, it is the last one, but in terms of the actual order in which they were released, is the second to last podcast. And I answered four questions that came from Shel Israel via Robert Scoble for the book that they're doing called The Red Couch. And I think that's what the book's called. And they've asked a bunch more questions. It sort of shifted gears, and I was kind of tired at the time. And so I decided to, like, do the next five questions, or that's actually one, two, three, four questions, in another podcast. So the next question is, he says, you've written with chagrin about the way the press has condensed and misquoted you. Can you give a few examples? Wow. Well, you know, basically almost every article about podcasting, I think actually without exception, no, the exception would be Tidbits did a very good, thorough job, I think, of researching and came up with an accurate chronology of, I mean, I have to go back and look to make sure of this because, you know, so that would be sort of like a whole slew of articles. I think the worst example I've ever seen was an article that was written in the Guardian, the UK newspaper, of apparently very high repute. They wrote an article about what they called the RSS Wars and made it highly dramatic and said that I had made a peace offering and basically spun all the events in sort of like the most dramatic fashion possible and actually made up some facts. The reporter was a part of the story and didn't disclose that. At times, he referred to people without naming them, and the person was himself. It was like, talk about making news. I mean, you know, the problem with the press is that they've become more important than the story. And in an ideal world, the reporter would simply be a conduit. It's what a reporter should be. In other words, something happened and somebody's reporting on it. Now, which is more important? The fact, the event that happened, or the reporter that's reporting on it? And, of course, the answer is that the event is more important than the reporter. But in the world that we live in today, that's no longer true. And this is a case where the reporter was so way off that he was actually in the story and didn't disclose it. This is exactly what you want to watch out for. We raised the issue with The Guardian after this guy had written a previous article, same person, had written a previous article in The Guardian, and they hadn't responded to my own personal call, you know, for, you know, let's do a credibility check here, and maybe you have to issue a mea culpa, you know, that you screwed up. And they threatened me, actually. It was a really amazing thing. So this time what I did was I got two other people to actually do the look, one a technical expert, one an expert on British press, and they still blew us off. They said, you must have an axe to grind with the newspaper or with the author. Well, yeah, maybe we do, but what's the point? I mean, you know, either you are an expert on it, in which case you might actually know whether there's a factual error or a whole bunch of factual errors, or you know nothing about it, in which case your opinion doesn't matter. So, yeah, what they were saying is that we know something about the situation and it's irrelevant. In other words, a reporter whose integrity is challenged, and this is a clear case where not only the reporter's integrity was in doubt, but the newspaper's integrity was and still is in doubt, that it needs to be handled in a very professional, fairly hands-off, arm's-length sort of, this is a good time to be objective. And in my experience, this is the exact place where most professional journalists completely lose their objectivity. They often get very rude and sarcastic and dismissive. They just have this barrier to criticism. You know, they don't want the light shone on themselves, which is so ironic, of course, because a good journalist is an expert in light shining and shouldn't have anything to hide when the light goes, you know, it gets shown on them. But the Guardian completely fell down on this one, and I will never stop making this an important, raising this question about this specific instance. And I've written about it on my Harvard weblog, which is blogs.law.harvard.edu/Dave. And if you go into the stories list, so you go append stories to that, you'll see it. It's one of the very few stories in that site. And we go through detail by detail what was factually incorrect, conflict of interest wise, and you know, all the problems with that particular story. I think it's an incredible case study in journalism falling down on its own credibility, and then when called on it, refusing to actually look into seeing what. And this is a newspaper that supposedly has a special function for looking into its own integrity. So, which, you know, is nonsense. I mean, the New York Times has one too, and they don't do it seriously. None of these guys do. And that's why we have blogs. Haha, that's going to fit into your book. I mean, we have blogs because we can't trust those guys. And blogs, believe me, they get vetted. Lots and lots of people examining it, what you say on your blog. And if you've made a factual error, in my case, for example, I mean, this is sort of a sidebar here. One of the great things about having a blog like Scripting News is that it's just an incredible research vehicle. If I want to get the answer to a question, it has to be in the right subject area. I mean, you know, if it, like, the real sweet spot is, gadgetry or server software or, you know, anything techie. Like I had a question about BitTorrent, a month ago, and then I had another question a few days ago, yesterday actually. And these guys just like swarm. I mean, and they just love showing off that, you know, when they have a technical answer. A few days ago, I had a problem with an XML file. I just for the life of me couldn't figure out what the hell's going wrong with this thing. And I said, I know what's going to happen here. I mean, I'll put this up on Scripting News. Within 5 minutes, I'll get the answer. And then for the rest of the day, people will be solving the problem, even if I put a thing up there saying, hey, you know, the problem's been solved. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's really cool that people are so anxious. I mean, it's sometimes when showing off actually is a very generous thing to do. And so, it's an incredible research vehicle. That's the nice side of it for the author. The not so nice side of, but equally important, is when they vet you and you make a mistake. And the only thing to do is, once you realize that you've made a mistake, is to say, I made a mistake. You know, not I don't always agree with people when they say that I've made a mistake, and so that usually or often will end up in sort of a flamey situation. You have to go through that. That's just life. But you really do have to take each one seriously, and because if you don't, then somebody else will. And that sort of acts as a, you know, as a check and a balance in a way. And the press is in this, whether they know it or not, whether they appreciate it or not, whether they accept it or not, they are now in this. Flow, their words and their actions are considered as carefully as those of a blogger. And, you know, as Don Park says, like, nobody likes to get woken up in the middle of the night. Well, that's why they're getting kind of angry with us. They sort of trash us because we, you know, as a group, and we're a very big group, millions of people, that we are looking very carefully at what they do. So, let's see. Do I need a blog to bypass the press? That's question number six. Couldn't DaveNet do that for you? The answer is to the latter. Yes, of course, DaveNet could. As I've said earlier, I think DaveNet is essentially a blog. In its essence, it's a blog. It's not in its form a blog, but it plays the same role. It played the same role. I don't write DaveNets anymore because spam has just completely eradicated the utility of email. It doesn't work anymore. So if you want to find out what I think, you better come to Scripting News. And this has created kind of a problem. It's like, where do I put my think pieces? And I've sort of solved that problem. Like yesterday, I wrote a piece that normally would have been a DaveNet, or in the old days would have been one, where I review the progress of the big three portal companies, Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft, in regards to RSS. And it got seen as a think piece and got pointed to quite a bit. It's at www.reallysimplesyndication.com. If you scroll through the calendar to the entry for yesterday, April 15th, you'll see the piece. And so I've sort of found new ways of doing the same thing. The problem is the email broke and blogs took off, and so that's the way we're going now. You absolutely do need a blog to bypass the press. Without blogs, we would have no ability to change the technology environment as we have done. RSS never would have happened without blogs. Neither would have XMLRPC or the MetaWeblog API or the Blogger API for that matter. It's the effective use of blogs to connect people together in a way that everybody gets a chance to speak, and that, you know, the sort of a meritocracy where, you know, the most consistently attractive voices, whatever that means, are the ones that sort of rise to the top. And you can get things done with a blog, and you can't get them done with the press. The press insists on handing the baton to the big technology companies all the time, and they have a belief that if you work for Microsoft, you're more likely to be able to solve a problem than somebody who like doesn't work for a big company, when all evidence, you know, says the other way is true. It's that if you work inside of a big company, then you know, no matter how smart you are, okay, you still have to please the hierarchy of the company, which may or may not be very smart or knowledgeable about the area that you're working in, or may have other agendas that have absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the technology. And then of course, being at a big company tends to make people sort of feel like they don't have to work as hard, that they've got this, you know, sort of power behind them. It breeds arrogance for sure. You know, I can tell you, I once chaired a session, at Siebold on web services. This is the really early days of web services. Siebold was still around, and, I invited a guy from Google and a guy from Amazon. And those assholes, I mean, that's really the way I saw it, were like, they were ignoring me. And I was the chair of the fucking panel. And it's like, they were so, like, patting each other in the back. These guys had been doing, you know, panels together in all kinds of different venues. And they were, like, just took it over. And I was there, Steve Zellers from Apple, who could have acted like an asshole, but he didn't. And Jake Savin from Userland. Those were the four guys on the panel. Sorry I called you guys a name, but you know what? You were being assholes, so there you go. Anyway, I'm going to get in trouble for that one. That's my opinion. You don't like it, tell us yours. Should executives blog? Well, okay, this is question number seven. Should executives blog, and why or why not? Well, you know, there you go. This is like a really crucial question, okay? And I don't, you know, I guess people might expect me to say, yeah, everybody should blog, blah, 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 you know? But it's going to be a long time before every executive is blogging, I think. I would love it if they would, because it would mean that we had had an upheaval in our economic system and in the way organizations work, and organizations sort of would be more a part of the world that they live in, and less sort of breathing their own fumes. Certainly, a company that has an executive who blogs is going to have a better idea of where they fit in, and is going to be seen as more approachable by their customers, and maybe given a chance to implement some ideas that customers really will, you know, love, and will make them want to buy more product and thereby make the company more profitable. All these things are benefits. The liability is that, you know, now do you want to have everybody in the company be a spokesperson for that company? And, you know, is everyone capable of being a spokesperson for the company and representing it well? Maybe what they think is wrong, and maybe what they think is not in the interest of the company either. Can you imagine, for example, somebody with an executive with a weblog that's widely read, that decides, you know, he's leaving the job and going to a competitor and decides to, like, dump some crucial information onto the web, you know? And sure, they could in the past talk to a reporter and maybe give them that information, leak it out, but it still wouldn't have the impact of it coming from the individual themselves. So it's a question to step up to carefully. You don't see a lot of executives blogging. You know, Jonathan Schwartz's son is basically the only one that comes to mind, and I think he's done an artful job of it. There was some controversy that, you know, where he posted some information that normally wouldn't be disclosed, or wouldn't be disclosed in such a way, or whatever, and it affected the stock price and created some kind of, it was about competition with HP, and he said something about HP that wasn't really all that kind. I'm not remembering exactly, but I remember that there was a controversy about it. And I remember thinking, well, so what? You know, I mean, he's a competitor, and, you know, he doesn't like HP, but we know that. I mean, if he did like HP, I mean, really liked HP, maybe they should find somebody to run the company who doesn't like them so much, because, you know, this is like a company who competes directly with the company that he runs. So, you know, if you're looking for an example, I guess look no further than Jonathan Schwartz at Sun. He's doing an exemplary job. To my knowledge, I don't think anybody at Microsoft executive level is blogging. I know that there have been there's been occasional sort of like, you know, forays into it. There was an Apple executive who marketed, Ken Bereskin, I think is his name. He blogged for a little bit. I know GM has a blog, but I think it's run by their ad agency, which to me, that means it's not a blog. You know, unedited voice of a person is sort of, you know, my benchmark of what makes something a blog. I think I've already answered number 8, which is the last question, which is what is different about a company that allows blogging? And, oh boy, well, maybe I haven't answered. What is different about them is that they, Well, you see, the thing is that what I'm really looking for, and this goes so far across the board, basically, in every area that blogging touches, is what I'm looking for is, like, never mind a company that allows blogging. What I'm interested in is bloggers that form companies. And because there you'll find that the philosophy of, here's another sort of key phrase, key identity for blogging is come as you are. And that's, we're just folks. So it means, like, you know, if this is what the joke way of saying it is, like, he's blogging in his pajamas or he's not wearing any pants or whatever. I mean, that's a sort of cute, maybe even derogatory, demeaning way of saying come as you are. I mean, if you're wearing jeans and sneakers and a t-shirt, that's fine. We're just bloggers here. And so, you know, a company that was built out of bloggers would have an idea of what it was doing, presumably. A good company built out of bloggers would know what it's doing and would be already tied into the community, would already have a fantastic publicity machine. You know, public relations for this company really would mean relating with the public as opposed to relating with the press. They would have so many advantages over their competitors. It's sort of like when users form companies. I wrote about this. It's a How to Make Money on the Internet version. There was a first version written in 2000 and a follow-up, I think it was 2002, which basically says that it's easier for a user to become a manufacturer than for a manufacturer to become a user. And it's ironic because the conventional wisdom is that it's the other way around, that users, you know, the reason why we have to go to the mountain and pray at the altar of the geniuses that work inside the, you know, hugely rich and deep companies and big companies that we admire so much is because we poor little people don't have the ability to do what they can do, which I think we've pretty well debunked. I think that actually the act of creativity is something that only a person can do. A company really can't do that. And when creativity is the product, then, you know, you have to look to a small group and maybe just an individual. And so the users basically will get ideas for products, and manufacturers, to the extent that they can embrace that concept and profit from it, well, that would be a company that allows blogging, would be very well tied into the network of users who are, you know, thinking about their products and not defending against them and not trying to protect themselves from them, but rather, you know, enjoying the interaction and finding it very intellectually gratifying to learn from them. I wrote about this in my piece about RSS yesterday, that the reason why RSS has been successful to the extent that it has been successful is that is that it's because the users are driving it and not the tech industry. The tech industry, Yahoo and Microsoft, as two examples of doing it the right way, are basically just using the technology as it came out of the blogging world and finding it that it works really well. And you know, my guess is that if they had tried to screw with it, they would have been left out of it. And I think that's, by the way, is where Google is. Google is going to need to swallow its pride and get in there and use the technology that was created outside of Google. And it's hard for them to do it because they've been such a successful, like, juggernaut of money making, that, you know, for them to think that perhaps they could, that some other people had done something that was worthy of them supporting. Well, you know, they were born on that premise. They didn't invent HTML or HTTP yet. They built a phenomenal company off of those two standards. And they need to do it again. And the question is, how far will they have to slide before they actually get this and actually start doing it? Now, I'd love to be proven wrong on this one. I'd love to find out that they have a great aggregator in the works and they have a new Ajax version of the Blogger interface, you know, user interface, and a really phenomenal API for that. And it's all, you know, going to be announced on Monday morning, and we'll spend next week just figuring out, wow, you know, look at how the world changed. See, that would be lovely, but only if they respect what everybody else has done, so that we don't all like have to, like, you know, justify our existence after that, you know. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Anyway, I really appreciate... Oh, wait, there's one more. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, there are so many more questions. Ay, ay, ay. How do I see blogging changing business? Chew. Why did I not see these? Some people call you the father of blogging. What's it? Biggest mistake a corporate blogger could make. I'm going to have to do another one of these. That's obviously the case. Because, you know, I was just... Let's see where we are in terms of time. Yeah, 37 minutes. It's amazing how close we got to 40. And I'm starting to get talked out. It's looking like it's a nice day outside. It's about 1:30 here in Florida. So I'm going to call it a day right now. And wish you all have a great day, a great... you know, have some coffee. If it's morning where you are, like, take some notes and listen to some great tunes and, you know, keep on keeping on. All right. See you later. Bye.